folks. Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 102. This is us, bitches. We here. We've been waiting on it for, I can't tell you how long we've been waiting, but it has finally arrived. We all saw it. We were excited about it. So that's what this episode is about. I'm your host, Day, and as always, I got my people with me. Scott, what's going on?
Not much, but although you introduced it as This Is Us, so to be clear, we're not talking about This Is Us. We're actually talking about us. Can you imagine if we were sitting there going like, well, you know, that last episode, you know, that, the real horror of Sterling K. Brown sitting there at the dinner table.
Hey, look.
Yeah, that would not be us. But
I mean, there's nothing Sterling K. Brown cannot do.
I touche, man. I watch This Is Us, so I can't complain about it. But for the purposes of this episode, we're discussing the film U.S.
I got y'all all beat. I've been a fan of Sterling since his old show on I want to say it was FX called Starved. It came out the same year as Sonny, but it didn't get picked up, and Sonny did. Oh yeah, he was great in it. He was an exercise bulimic cop.
What?
Or excuse me, exercise anorexic cop. So Starved was about a support group of people with eating disorders.
Wow.
And it was three different characters. One dude was a bulimic, big fat dude, like otherwise like really healthy marriage. A skinnier dude who was a purger who just was a serial organizer, and then Sterling K. Brown was like an exercise anorexic cop. Really good looking, really successful. People were always interested in him, but he kept people at bay because they didn't want anybody to know how fucked up he was.
Dude, it was only on for seven episodes.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, it was outstanding. I loved it so much more than Sonny. In fact, I didn't watch Sonny for a couple of seasons because I was bitter that Sonny got picked up and Starved didn't.
Well, see, wow. I mean, the first season of Sonny was not the shit. It literally took until
it was terrible.
It took until Danny DeVito came back. When Danny DeVito signed on to it full time, the show went in a very different direction and took off. So I get it. Oof. But yeah, man. We get out the room. Oh, the person you just heard from, that's the retiring problematic Bay. He wants to be less problematic. And he wants to be a regular Joe. He just wants you to love him. But
oh God!
But we are Get Out the Room, a horror pop culture podcast, and this night we're actually going to talk about some horror shit.
Here we go.
Imagine that.
Who'd have thought?
Yeah, you can find us anywhere good podcasts are found. So, the aforementioned Jordan Peele's Us. This is. Maybe outside of the second part of it, this is the most looked forward to horror film of the year.
Yep,
that's fair.
Zombieland, the second Zombieland for me is up there too.
Is Zombieland coming out this year?
Is that this year?
It is. I would probably still put Us and then Zombieland and then it.
Yeah, I'd switch those two. I think it's Us. It and then Zombieland for me. Okay. And not to say I don't like Zombieland because I thought it was a great film.
Well, I will say this. The only thing I'll say before we jump into Us about Zombieland is the only thing they've released about it so far is that poster. And it's like a 10-year challenge where they have the original poster and then the new one. And it looks like bad Photoshop to me, so that makes me a little concerned.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing we've seen thus far.
Mm-hmm.
And the Jesse Eisenberg taste has washed away since Lex Luthor.
That wasn't his fault. Come on now, we talked about that.
Yeah. So I'm not as, I'm not as sold on him. And he was good in Zombieland, but yeah.
He was great in Zombieland.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very much so.
So anyway, back.
Yeah. So here we go. Jordan Peele, second time out. No sophomore slump, kids. Your man is here, and he's quite good. I think we are at the point now where we have a new voice and vision in horror. You know, I think with Get Out, he set a precedent. There was a very specific vision. It was a very specific experience. It spoke to one group of folks more than others, but it was so well made, everyone could enjoy it. This, however, this one's for everybody.
Yep.
And it is downright terrifying, man. When I got to say, I absolutely enjoyed it. Tone, do you want to set this up a little bit?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, fuck you, because this movie is hard to unpack. But but basically what we have here is a cabin on the beach, if you will. A family decides to go to their beach house in Santa Cruz, California, which just happened to be a scene and setting up a traumatic experience for the matriarch of the family. And I do say matriarch with intention. She is running shit in this film.
I'm going to come back on that later, but
and hijinks ensue. People get killed. Folks get their man cards tested, revoked, and won back all within the same, what are we talking about, 100 minutes or so?
2 hours, 120.
Wow. It flew by for me.
It was a very tight 2 hours.
I wouldn't have guessed more than, fuck, I wouldn't have guessed more than 110. Yeah, like 100 minutes, I thought. Jesus. Well, there you go, folks. Very tight film. That's as much of the plot as I can give you without spoiling anything. I will say one thing, though. Get Out had some good images, you know, some good visuals, but this film is like visually arresting. Like, this shit is cinematic gold. Like, it's not just the plotting and the writing. Like, the dude, he's a straight up and down, well-rounded director.
Scott?
I absolutely agree. I think visually this movie stands well and above your typical horror movie. And I think we've moved past quote unquote typical horror movie these days for the ones that are really worth watching. And this one fits that bill. I dare say, the first time I watched the Us trailer, the very first Us trailer, I was blown away. I thought it was one of the better trailers I had ever seen. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. It helps that you're anchoring it with Lupita Nyong'o. I mean, she's awesome in this movie. And they anchored it with a really great haunting remix of I Got Five on it too. And it worked. It really, really worked. And it was, I remember I watched it and I sent it to all my friends if they came over and we're watching something on TV. I played that trailer for them right away. I was like, you guys got to go check this movie out. Hey, check this trailer out. This thing looks, and all of them said the same thing. Like, whoa, that thing is creepy as fuck. Wow. I mean, I've never seen a movie like this, or I've never, you know, wow. That's going to be great. And then you tell them, oh, it's probably the guy that made Get Out. And then they kind of, you know, they perk up even more and go like, oh, okay. Yeah. I like Get Out. Okay. That sounds pretty good. So, I mean, it had everything stacked in its favor going in. And then it really does. I mean, throughout the movie, I think I had, feelings of bone chill. Parts of it were bone chilling. Parts of it were genuinely creepy. Parts of it were confusing, but not in a bad way. It was very, it had your mind racing because I wanted to know answers, and yet I was willing to sit there and kind of absorb everything. And it's a very quick moving and very tight, film. And, you know, it worked. It worked completely.
Yeah. This is a really well done film. You know, one of the things that I think that will stand out is how good of a filmmaker Jordan Peele is becoming. Lupita Nyong'o,
absolutely,
Winston Duke. They have the lion's share of a lot of the heavy lifting.
Oh yeah,
and they both absolutely kill it. Winston Duke just does.
Winston Duke is great, and he's going to be overlooked a lot because of how good Wikipedia is, which is kind of a shame because he's really, really good. When he gets out of the car and he does the dab with the kids, and he's just like that perfect mix of like the nerdy but cool dad. I mean, it's
caring, like, he's corny, but you know, like there's a lot of love behind it. There's a lot of warmth. Like there's a genuine display, you know, and we all know that dad. You know what I mean? Like I thought that was exceptional. So shout out to Winston Duke. You know, Lupita does work that is transformative in a way. We talked about Toni Collette last year in Hereditary.
Right.
This is probably on the same level, but times two, because there are multiple roles that Lupita knocks out of the park here, and they are different. They are interconnected. They are each really, really special. If this isn't the horror role they get some sort of nomination, man, I don't know what is.
Yeah, no, if it doesn't happen here, it just can't happen.
Right.
It just can't happen. Because this is a...
But you know, there's something... To that point, though, I agree with you. I hope that she does get a nomination. And I'm assuming she will get a nomination of some sort. But it just highlights how disappointing it was that Toni Collette didn't.
Yep.
I get to take the focus off of us here for a minute, but you know, Hereditary is a really great and creepy flick too, and it's anchored by her performance, and it's one of those things. It kind of leads up to, remember back in what was it 08 when Dark Knight came out, and everybody was up in arms that didn't win as many awards as it probably should have. I mean, it got, you know, Heath Ledger won his award,
but
then they changed everything after the fact because they were like, you know, that committee kind of went, oh wow, we really fucked up. We really fucked this up here. And I hope they, you know, maybe they got kicked in the ass from the Hereditary thing. I mean, that's not a reason to put her on it. I mean, they both deserve, you know, praise, but this is the kind of performance that demands it. I mean, it just, you know, you have to, it's made a lot of money now. It's got great reviews. The fans have reacted to it. This is
it's made a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
It might be the most profitable film this year. I mean, when you look at what it was made for versus what it's pulling in, I wouldn't be shocked. This is the most
percentage
profitable.
Percentage wise.
Yeah.
You have a really incredible set of actors. And you got a really fresh palette. And one of the things that Jordan Peele talks about is he wants to make a movie that no one's seen before, that no one's made before. And I think he
It is.
But I think he's absolutely done that here. I think he's found a way to create a story that no one's seen. And, you know, I enjoyed it. So before we get into the spoilery aspect of what we normally do, I'd like to just go ahead and start off with some slashes.
All right. Well, I'm gonna go first. I am probably going to take the crown back on this one, but I'm gonna give it an 8.5 slashes.
So you liked it the same amount as Captain Marvel?
Yeah, actually, I would say.
Okay, because I got 8.5 too. Yeah, okay.
I would say I did, yeah.
Hey, I had no problem. You know, I have no issues with that. Scott?
I, too, am going to go with an 8.5. There's one part of this that I cannot get into until we start talking some spoilers here. that keeps it from being a 9 or dare I say a 9.5. There's one thing. Other than that, I really have no complaints. I'll go back to that confusing statement I made before. One of the movies that this movie reminded me of in a way is one of my favorite movies, Primer. Primer is a,
the time travel joint?
Yeah, the time travel joint.
Yeah, which is basically the best time travel movie.
Absolutely. Ever. I mean, and Primer's one of those movies that every time I watch it, and I love rewatching it, and it's confusing as fuck. That movie is just, you can unravel it in many different ways too. And I've seen deconstruction videos and reviews on it in many different ways as well.
Yeah.
And I love rewatching it. And that is what I like about Us. I think I already want to go see it again. In fact, I was talking to my brother the other day who asked how good it was, or, you know, how was it? And I said, oh, it's good. And he's like, do you want to see it again? I was like, I absolutely want to see it again. And I think it's a movie that's going to get better with age, because now I'm going to look at it through the eyes of someone who knows what's going on. So
you're going to pick up more stuff.
I figured shit out that I didn't get the first time and go, oh, okay. And there's stuff you could figure out before, but some of the deeper seated stuff I had to look into a little bit, after I had seen the movie. So I'm excited to go back and see it with a fresh set of eyes after knowing all of that too. I want to go 9, 9.5 on it, but like I said, I'll get into why it's not that score specifically when we kind of break it down a little bit.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I get it. I don't have those problems, so I'm just going to go ahead and go 9. And y'all know how I go.
Sandbagging son of a bitch.
Look, y'all know how I go, man. I enjoyed it. I had a great time with it. It was a film that was deeper, and the longer you sit with it,
absolutely.
There's more stuff that comes to you later on.
Yep.
And you start to, because Scott, you saw it Thursday night. I saw it Friday night, and you were like, "Yeah, I'm still digesting." I'm like, "What the fuck is there to digest?" Yeah. After watching, it's like, okay, I get that. I understand that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's where I'm at. I saw it Saturday, and I'm digesting. And I may be digesting for quite some time. There is a lot to unpack with this film.
You're absolutely right. There's a ton. And I think that's more than anything. I think it's just like this huge kind of nod to how good Jordan Peele is, what he's crafted here. It's not a regular movie. There's just a lot to it. That's cool. So, if for those of you who have not seen this, now is your exit point. Imagine me giving the flight attendant two fingers towards either side of the plane, directly behind you, and in front of you. 3, 2, 1. Get the fuck out. Here we go. Spoiler time, bitches. Let's go. So, Scott, get into your issues while we're talking about it.
Okay. So I'm going right for it too. So if you're still here, that's your issue.
It's on you.
The one thing that I did not care for strong, because it kind of saves itself even afterwards a little bit. I felt that the big twist was too predictable. And
both of y'all saw that coming. I did not.
See, now, I wish.
And I'm usually the dude who's like, oh, I knew that was going to happen because.
Well, I was just going to say, if I hadn't seen it coming, I may have gone as high as a 10 on this thing. And it because the last, I hate to bring this movie up when we're talking about Us, but the last movie that truly blew me away with the ending was the first Saw, the very first one. I loved the ending to that, and it brought it back. The movie was fine up to that point, and then the ending hit, and I'm like, damn, I was blown. I loved it. And this one had that potential leading up to it. But, you know, I knew right from the, so the setup there is when she walks into that the beach tunnel thing, her character, and she goes in, and you kind of knew a little bit of that from the trailers they had shown, which is fine. But the Hall of Mirrors, you kind of knew where they were going with that a little bit. And even right from then, I had the suspicion that perhaps there was a switcheroo of sorts. And as the movie went on, they hinted at it even through the actions of the main character, Adelaide.
Adelaide.
Yep.
Okay. So when Adelaide was kind of reacting to some of the violence she was doing, you got hints of, why is she acting this way? She's a little darker than she probably should be. She's grunting a little bit here. She's enjoying this a little bit more than some of the other characters, where they're just reacting out of fear. She's kind of reacting and acting at the same time to an enjoyment level that perhaps, am I noticing this too much? Should I be noticing this too much? I guess I wish it was a little more subtle. That way it would have been more shocking when the reveal actually happened, that she and Red were actually the opposite people.
But so again, here's the thing. I don't want to take anything away from you.
Yeah.
I think we grade on a scale on like a curve almost, right? Like, we watch these films so often, we know what to look for. Even in the midst of calamity, chaos, watching facial expressions, we're watching foreshadowing, we know how these films end. And I think particularly on a film like this, it plays against us, because it speaks to Lupita's performance, it speaks to the pacing, the way this film is set, it speaks to all that, and I absolutely love that about this film. You know, I saw the switcheroo coming. The young lady I saw with Tiffany, I was like, hey, this what it is. She's like, I didn't catch that at all. About 70% of the people didn't see it coming.
Hmm. And that's fine. And maybe you're absolutely right. I mean, it's obvious that we watch more movies like this. We dissect them more than the average moviegoer too.
Yeah.
And I get that, but I mean, I thought it was fairly obvious. Especially they nail it home when she goes back in to get the car keys at that fan at their friend's house, and she's killing the twin, and you know, the son walks in and stares at her, and she just kind of gives him that look back, and there's not even, they don't say anything. They just kind of have that look, and she's enjoying, and maybe not enjoying it, but she's just, her killing is more, I mean, remember the husband on the boat, you know, he shot that flare. It was kind of a funny scene where he shoots the flare and he goes, oh, okay. But he still comes out of it. You know, he just did it because he had to survive. She's in there doing it the same thing, but she's doing it to a point where she's going in on that girl.
Okay. All right. So
right now I saw a little bit. So let me just interject real quick.
Yeah, jump in here, Tom.
So when I was watching that, what I noticed was a clear bifurcation between the males and the females in this family. Both male characters, the son and the father, were reluctant but clever.
Yeah.
Females came from a very visceral spot. Like, homegirl was swinging that motherfucking ball like Tiger
Woods. Oh, man.
I was the same thing.
She was going for it. So when I saw that, I just saw that as maybe a comment upon what happens. And you'll notice this when you go through this with women. You know, there's something sort of changes in women when they have children. They become scarier. And I just thought that was sort of a comment upon that fierceness that is nascent in women. So that's what I saw that as. So I sort of, and you know what, that's actually kind of a good point. I spent so much time trying to figure out what this movie was about that you know, had I been watching it like straight up like I would have watched a regular movie, because I would have felt like I had the brain power to spare to that, I might have caught some other things. But I was so off balance trying to pick apart the symbolism and the metaphors and the cinematography and like all of it, that this movie really caught me flat-footed in a way I'm not often caught flat-footed.
It was weird for me to hear you say that, because I thought you would be the person who picked up the fastest. Like, they tell you, okay, particularly when Red shows up, she was like, yeah, there's an experiment. They made two people, but they forgot to put a soul. So where Get Out was a film of one person and two souls,
right?
Us is a film of two people with one soul.
Right.
And that's all this was to me. And like, once I like set that up, everything else was extra.
Now, see, I was trying to figure out what the film was trying to say about society. I spent a lot of time there. Like, Get Out had a very particular voice.
Yep.
It had a message.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to figure out what the message was. And it took me a while. Even though I know he had said, there's none of that here, this is just a straight up and down horror film.
And that's not true.
Which was a lie. Which was a lie. But
the duality of man is all here.
Right. Well, there's so much to talk about. I mean, this is what we're doing.
That's what we're here for.
There's the duality of man. There's like what I spoke to you about before. Langston Hughes has this quote about the second sight, that all quote unquote Negroes, that's what they called us back then, that all Negroes have. It's like the way you see yourself as you believe you are, and yet you are constantly outside of yourself, seeing yourself as other people see you, and you do this constant dance between trying to make sure you don't show too much of yourself. Again, this is another quote from Paul Laurence Dunbar, "We Who Wear the Mask." Like, you want to wear the mask to protect yourself, but you can't ever forget that you're wearing a mask, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's really apropos to this particular film, because I think there are some of us who get so far into the idea of getting away from the real aspects of who we are, the further away you get, the more you forget that other part of you doesn't exist.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You look at somebody like the sun. I was having a conversation with my guy Asher from Boston College, and he was like, why did it seem like the sun was so still attached to his tether, right? And I was like, well, he's still young. You know, he's not encumbered by life and the pursuit of all this other shit. He's still very close to his shadow, his other thing. So he's still really in tune with it, which is why he could see when his mother, who was a tether,
right, he could see that
he
in
could
a way
see
everyone
it
else
in her. You know,
and so, hey, I'll tell you what, that's what brought me back to, I liked that aspect of the twist.
Yeah.
At the very end, I really liked that he had that, you know, as she was, it was almost like they played it in a way where she was kind of realizing it herself in a way too.
Well, she definitely realized it too. It was after, because Red told her, but it didn't hit home for her until Red gave her the business all up and down the tunnels underground.
Right.
You know, that's when it hit her. Like, she had suppressed it for so long, she believed that she was the one who's supposed to be on top.
Right.
Now, see, that was my question. Did she remember in that moment that we saw? Or, okay, so I was trying to figure out, was it right then that she remembered, or was it right then that they decided to let us in on it? You know what I mean?
No, so remember, at the very end, you know, Red stabbed out, and she starts to whistle, the itty-bitty spider, and came out the water spout, right?
Mm-hmm.
The symbolism of coming out from the tunnels and getting out, that was the trigger for Adelaide / you know, whatever, the tether. That was her trigger. Like, oh, no, shut the fuck up. You're not going to bring me back to that point. But it all became clear. She got it. She even got that little laugh. She even got the
yep.
Like, she had come full circle. and now she is a whole person. That means because Red's dead, now she carries Red and Adelaide at the same time. It's all of these things. Like, it takes trauma to bring you full circle to remember who you are. And that was crazy.
Yes, it was.
But to the original point, the son, he saw it. He said he was like, "Oh nah, this shit is not okay." He put his fucking mask on. The shit hit him so real. He put the mask on, like, "Oh nah, mom's not okay."
Yep.
So the son was
really. That's not something I saw. But that's one of the things that I spoke about this previously to a friend when I'm talking about the film. You know, I have had more fun digesting this film and talking about this film than I had actually experiencing the film. And that's not a comment on, that's not a knock against the film
thing. I agree.
It's so thick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, man. I agree 100%.
I'll tell you something else that took me a little bit, and this is something that I got thinking about it after the fact. One of the big things that at the time when they were doing the exposition at the end of, you know, kind of explaining the whole, how the tethered rose up and did the hand-to-hand thing across the country.
Yeah, hand across America.
So, for a minute, I was thinking, like, man, wait a minute. I was trying to wrap my head around it. And then it kind of, as the twist kind of sets in, you realize that the reason that the tethered were able to be so organized in the first place is because they had someone down there that wasn't one of them.
Correct.
And it like I said, that's where the hands across America, because at the beginning of the film, the Adelaide is watching that
across America.
Right. And it's just like, and as you're I'm like, oh, okay, they were able to do this. And the whole reason that all came to be is she's the originator of this.
Yeah. Keep in mind, she was wearing a Hands Across America t-shirt.
Right. And that's where they got, I mean, that was their religion for all else.
Correct.
You know what I mean? I mean, that was all they knew. So they see that, they know that, they go up, and that's what they do, because that's the tethered, that's all they can understand.
Yep.
And she's the one that organized them to that point. You know, the scissors and the red jumpsuits, I mean, and that's her. That came from
because
her.
The red were the Hands Across America. Well, the other thing, which was the other clue, Red's the only one who can vocalize. She's the only one that can talk.
Correct.
Right.
You know, that was the giveaway. You know, when you realize later, none of the other ones can talk. They go, they kind of yell, screech, and moan at each other. But, you know, Red's the only one who can talk. The only one. And she's
the one.
You know, as you look back on it, all that stuff starts to become really clear.
Like, it makes complete sense looking back on it. But up until that point, I honestly just didn't catch it. And usually, I'm the one who's like, hey, I saw this and that led to that, but this one caught me flat-footed. It really did. One of the things I wanted to talk about was just some of the bigger themes in this film. Yeah. You know, like, what is Jordan trying to tell us? Like, in Get Out, it's pretty obvious what he's trying to tell us. We've done that ad nauseum. That was pretty easy to knock out the park. This one is a little more shaded. There's a lot of the Venn diagram on this joint is like sacred geometry. Like, it's a lot going on here.
It's tough, man. What do you think about like the paper chase and all the shit that you're doing? You know, Winston Duke and, you know, the dude, the black family man, he's the dad, but he's still chasing the ideals that, you know, the rich white dude is telling him. You know, he's trying to get him to get the boat. You know, he's like, yeah, but did you get the fire extinguisher though? And at one point, you know, and at one point they make a thing of showing you their two boats side by side.
Right.
So you see it, like you see the meager, lake house that the family is in. And then you switch to the white boathouse and that shit is plush as fuck.
That thing was better looking than 99% of most people's houses.
Correct.
Like, that's their second home.
Right.
That is obscene.
Yeah.
Like, man, they were doing it.
And think about, as a family, they all were like, yo, we get to ride in a car though.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't on accident. Like, you know, everybody knew that their car was fire. Like, these are all these things, man. I thought that shit was pretty real. I liked that aspect of it.
One of the things that I liked was the, just the wild abandon that Sister Girl took off on them twins. Like, that was a lot of, I am sick of these little so-and-sos fucking with me and fucking with my brother. There was a lot of I knew there was a lot of them teasing her about her hair or her complexion or whatever. Like, there was a lot in that. Like, when it came time to go, homegirl turned around and swung that thing like it was nothing. Like, she was not worried about catching the wrong one.
Nope, she was worried with the shits.
For the good one or the bad one, she was ready to go.
She was with the shits. We are here for it. Like, look.
Like, if I catch one of y'all by mistake, oh, fucking well.
Yeah, everyone gonna die. Pew, 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 everybody gonna die. I mean, she was legit just swinging for the fences. And once she made contact.
I'm still trying to figure out how she knocked the one in the head over the balcony onto the table. And that bitch survived that.
Well, they're clearly, they don't feel pain.
Oh, yeah. I know. But I mean, like, she's that was the one where I was just like, whoa, you know, and of course it's very horror movie from that aspect, but, and, you know, and it worked. It's just like, man, she clubbed that bitch to death. She flew her onto the table and was like, whoa, she still got up.
Yeah. Well, and let's talk about that a little bit because, you know, I had the pleasure of, guesting on another podcast, freaking awesome podcast.
Boy Benjamin Bryan.
Yes, and we talked about it there. And he had a theory about what Mr. Peel was trying to say, and I'm gonna steal his theory and try to do as much justice to it as I can, and I'm gonna give you all mine. But basically, his thought was that because of the gold and the red, gold represents Mr. Trump. That's his favorite metal. The red is Red State America. She made a very Red made a point to say we are Americans. Like, it was a weird thing for her to focus on.
Yeah, you're like, what are you? We're Americans.
Right. So there's an argument that could be made that you know, these people that we are, you know, these people are here and they're fucking shit up, but they're fucking shit up because they feel aggrieved and perhaps rightfully so.
They are left behind.
Yeah, and they are making their presence known. So this is the Trump.
Who said that, you know, you left us behind. Right, so, we had to eat raw rabbits.
Right. So this is Trump's. This is Trump's America. That's what Jordan Peele is saying. This is the Trump wave. This is how this shit came to be. That's kind of my bastard my bastardized version of what Ben was trying to express.
Shout out to Benjamin Bai. That's a dope take.
It was a dope take, wasn't it?
It's a dope take.
But me having recently seen Captain Marvel, I thought, okay, so we have these people who are coming after you. You know, I had this, we have these people that are coming after you, and they are the bad guys. So we have to defend them. We are the beautiful people, but the ugly people are coming after us, and they're gonna hurt us. They're gonna take what we have. And then when you roll the tape back, what you realize is you were dealing with the repercussions of a grievance that you have inflicted upon people. This is the chickens coming home to roost. Although you feel like you are the good guy, you are not.
Yeah, you feel like
you are the villain. Yeah, these people are the good people.
This is what you created.
Right. And so that was my take on that. That was my take on that. Like, okay, you have, you know, society does a really good job of picking winners and losers, you know, and then we get to look at the losers in a certain light. And then and that enables us to disregard their feelings, their pain, their suffering, their whatever, and be like, well, you know, if they were good people, they wouldn't be in the situation that they are in, completely disregarding all the mechanisms that got them there. But in reality, these people have been injured, and we are complicit in this injury. And at some point, that bill is going to come due. And the sticker shock is real. You know what I'm saying?
That shit is real. It is due. But everyone's due. Black folks, white folks. You know, one of the things that was very real is that you saw when Elizabeth Moss's family came, those us's.
That shook me.
It surprised me to death there. I thought we were focused on a very personal story until that scene.
Right. Yeah, that's when the world got bigger. Yep. That's when I was like, oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Yep.
But I will say this, though. I love the world.
Shits immediately, by the way.
I will say this, though. The thing that I didn't like, the reason why this got 8.5, I'll tell you really what I wanted to give this was a 7.5 slashes. Ooh. But due to the phenomenon that I told you about, like, I'm enjoying talking about it so fucking much, and anything that can make me think this much has got to get at least a slash or two on GP. And that's how it got to 8.5 from 7.5. But one of the things that I was a little disappointed in this film was I didn't feel that the world building was as tight. Like the government and conspiracy and the underground tunnels, and that gives you sort of like a broad overview, but like, okay, so they have these tunnels every so many feet. They doing this in every city in America. Well, why? So who did this? For what purpose? Like,
told you that from the very beginning.
They tell you, okay, the government did this, and they saw it as a way to control the top.
No, there was a story card.
Oh, the script? Yeah, that there are so many tunnels.
Yeah, again, but I don't think they said nobody knows why they're there.
Yeah,
so,
but what's the motivation, though?
Doesn't matter. Motivation is not why we're here, because – the other aspect is Jordan Peele talked about the fact that there's a whole Tether mythology that he really wants to get into, but the film is not as scary if you know everything about their background. You don't need to know all
that. I get that.
All you need to know is these motherfuckers is here and they cut people up. Like, think about it like this. When we talk about the bill has come due, right? There is whatever you love, whatever you've basically forsaken your true self for, that shit is coming back to get it. You know, you look at Elizabeth Moss. She had talked about just having a little tightening in the face and Botox and, you know, whatever that shit was, right?
Mm-hmm.
Her tether, the first thing she did was go into the mirror and mutilate her face. You know, to blow away some of that beauty, to blow away some of that vanity.
Yeah, I saw that. I also noticed how Sister Girl had a nice little natural, you know, coconut oil type do, and her tether's hair was permed within an inch of his life. Look, I have seen many times in middle school and junior high. It is the look of a girl who's trying to get straight hair who doesn't quite know how to take care of it yet. And that just something about the juxtaposition of those two girls, about one who obviously had a good idea about like what self-care was and like how to execute it, and the other one who was clearly striving for a beauty ideal that was never meant for her in the first fucking place, and eschewing self-care in the, you know, eschewing self-care for the benefit, you know, for the goal of this beauty standard that's unattainable. Something about seeing that really like fucked with me in a real way.
Look,
and it had me thinking that Jordan Peele was going a very particular kind of way before I realized that it wasn't about that at all.
Yeah, but think about the fact that, you know, privilege, access, and resources will allow you to get roughly anything you want out of this world.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Did you notice all the extra plaque on the other's teeth?
Correct. Because they don't have all proper dental care in Tetherworld.
Right. Right. The extra plaque, the brother had the beard that, you know, he had that nice thick Philly beard. You know what I'm saying? Winston Duke's double had a serious thing going on with that beard, you know, and he was obviously stronger than Winston Duke.
Well,
there was a lot going on.
He's unencumbered. Like the thing.
There you go.
Was it Gabriel?
Yes, Gabe.
Gabe, you know, he's a regular dude. He's, you know, smart. He's an economist. He was a Howard grad, but I forgot what the other's name was because I actually had a name for him.
Abraham
doesn't have health insurance. Like, you know, he doesn't have glasses. Like he's squinting through his entire existence. He can't see very well. Like he's just,
right,
his tactile senses, he's hearing, he's smelling, he's tasting. You know, the moment he actually got his glasses and he saw, he was like, holy shit, Is this?
It was like, this is what I've been missing?
Right. Is this what the world really looks like?
Right. Yeah, man. Right. Yeah, there's something, and you know, before we get too far away from it, there's something about the characterization of black fatherhood and black manhood in Gabe that, frankly, is revolutionary, and I don't think anybody's going to notice it. We have never got to see a black male father get to take off his cool, to quote Benjamin Three Stacks. This is not a cool dad. This isn't a scary dad. This is a stereotypical sitcom, goofy dad jokes on fleek. This is a showing of perspective, This is a depiction of black fatherhood and black malehood that is super rare. I don't think I have ever seen a black man portrayed as goofily and dorkily and warmly as I've seen here.
Well,
like, this is something serious going on here.
He's vulnerable. I mean, like, he's not,
yes,
not gangster. You know what I mean?
No, there's not. No.
Y'all trying to get, like, he was puffing his chest out, trying to be more hood than he was.
It was done so comically that you knew it was bullshit. You don't get to see that with black men.
But I don't even know if it was comical.
You don't get to be vulnerable.
I think it was Winston Duke's portrayal, though. The idea that he's not really that hard. And when the shit started to go bad, like, it just went bad.
You think that was the actor's choice and not in the script, not the director?
Mm-mm. I don't want to take that. I don't want to go that far. But I'll say that the genuineness that you felt was due to actor portrayal.
On that we can very much agree. But I'm just saying, I've never seen a black male depicted that way.
It's very different. I mean, it's very. I wouldn't say, because it's probably a UPN dad that looks like that. Kadeem Hardison and what's the Casey Undercover?
All right. I mean, I can't quite call that mainstream, but
I know what you mean. I'm splitting hairs just to bring something up. I agree with you.
Yeah, you playing that devil's advocate tough. Like, you on team devil. I get it. I'm just saying.
Yeah. The biggest thing for me is that I think you already said the chicken's got to come home to roost. Like, this bill gonna come due, and you gonna pay it, Scott. Jump
yes,
in.
And finance charges and interest are a motherfucker.
Mm-hmm. the most interesting aspect that I think people are gonna hit on this, and the rewatchability comes back from the exploration of duality and all of its meanings.
Yes,
absolutely.
In every aspect of that term, and Damon, I think you had mentioned this. We were talking about it maybe yesterday or maybe even today about, you know, it's a study of what part of you may not want to go back to see that's coming back to rear its ugly head.
Yeah.
And say,
yeah, you know, hide it.
Yes.
So take what you've managed to attain.
Correct. And when you let it go and let it loose, I mean, look what happens. It can be peaceful by joining hands across the country, but to get to that point, you have to literally kill everything in sight with a pair of scissors before you get to that point.
Well, you take
power concedes nothing without a struggle, Frederick Douglass.
Exactly. Correct.
Yeah. Yep. You know, it's wonderful to just on a movie making side, the scenes where Red and her family break into the house.
That's horror 101 done terrific.
I was like, oh, this is The Strangers.
Yes,
absolutely.
You know, the open, this is The Strangers, and it's done perfectly. Right?
Yeah.
And done very well. Very well.
And when you start to run, girl. Like the vocalization that Red has. Lupita talks about how she created that particular vocalization and then the tenor going up and down the whole thing. It's incredible, man. The whole thing's crazy. But the scene she didn't say, chain yourself. She said, tether yourself to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And you go through all, this very intentional wordplay here, super intentional stuff. It's really, really well done. But when they first get into the house and you're not really sure what's about to happen, it is terrifying. And then it becomes particularly more terrifying when you see how everybody else just got fucking wasted.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, and then and it's funny because the same set of handcuffs that she made Lupita tether herself to were the same set of handcuffs that she herself was tethered to the bed with.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's that whole, what is it? Gosh, there's a certain expression for it, but basically it all boils down to if any of us are not free, then none of us are free. You know, the same shackles I used to enslave you are the same shackles that I used to enslave me, you know? And that kind of, again, to your point, duality was like everywhere. And to the point of like, the rejecting the things that we view negatively about ourselves. I spoke about the young black girl's hair. We can see the same thing in the white twins. The little white girls, they was on that Kim Kardashian, they had their coconut oil and all that other shit. They was looking good. The, for lack of a better term, hillbilly twins, limp hair, greasy, same yellow teeth, like, the red eye, the red rings around their eyes, like
pale there is skin, a, washed out.
Yeah, looking sickly. Like there is a there's a visceralness to this depiction. Like they honestly looked like they were messed out, which again is another one of these things that is afflicting like our poor, rural, isolated communities. Like all of this was, in my opinion, about like the beautiful people. We have a society, and in our society there are standards. These standards are set by the beautiful people, and they're set by the beautiful people because what it takes to get to these standards are means and methods that are outside of most of people's reach. And so we have these other people who are tethered to this beauty standard they don't have the means to do. And so they must go through drastic methods to get it. Like, for instance, Red spoke about this, how Addie had a C-section to birth her last son, and Red had to rip her own stomach open with scissors to do the same thing. It's like you set the standard that we all are supposed to meet, and yet we don't have the tools to do it the way you do it. So we have to hurt ourselves to get there. And then at some point, all this pain comes due. Like someone has to pay the toll, and it can't just be us. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
That's some good shit.
Yeah.
That's some good shit. I like that a lot. I think there are aspects of this that we could talk about pretty much all day and night.
But, pretty much.
let's look at some of the visual imagery that I thought was really intentional. One I just sent you guys earlier, the scene where young Adelaide, for lack of a better term, is in the mirror maze, and the visuals are almost identical to Childish Gambino's Awaken My Love, the album cover, the color palette and the whole thing, with the dark skin and the facial structure. It's really
the almost black lighting, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Which I thought was very, very cool.
Something I want to touch on that I just kind of was thinking about after having seen the Michael Jackson documentary, which hurt my spirit in like all kinds of different ways. But the little girl's wearing a Thriller shirt. At the end of the video for a Thriller, what does Michael Jackson do? He turns to the camera and reveals himself to be the monster.
The monster, and smiles.
Right. I'll protect you from all this, and that. Oh, by the way, it's me though.
Yeah, and then
And then we have mom trying to protect them, trying to prepare them for these people that are coming after them. But in reality, she is the cause of all of this.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And even further, there's a moment where Winston Duke is hurt and he's talking about driving. And she's like, no, I make the decisions now.
Right.
And extrapolate that out closer to, you know, the Trump and all that kind of other shit. Like, men have led this country for far too long, and this is where it has gotten us.
Right. You have driven the car into a ditch. You've taken the keys, Jack. Yep. You don't get to drive anymore.
So now, mom, the women have to save us. The women and the children
You know, Damien, you and I spoke about that, and I'm so glad you brought that up. We have got to talk about that, because typically the horror movie trope is that we have a dismissive, almost asshole-ish husband, father, male figure who is dispatched quickly because he's so dismissive and whatnot.
Yep.
And then out of necessity, the woman has to come to. She's got to rise to the occasion. That's not what happens here. We have a present, if complacent, but a present and willing male partner who is just not as capable as the female partner. And he is there throughout, but through her good works, she is proving that she is the better protector of this family. That's not something you see in horror at all.
But that's not true at all.
It's a testament to the times we're in now, too. I think we can appreciate. I mean, hell, we just covered Captain Marvel, and I mean, it goes to show that,
Captain Marvel, able to investigate Captain Marvel is that not aspect. Captain Marvel is not a horror film, and the last girl trope of horror is a very real and solid trope for a very real reason.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. The final girl is in every horror film.
But again, she's the final girl, because where do the men go? The men are dispatched very early on, more often than not, due to being dismissive and being stupid or not taking the threat seriously, and they get dismissed very early.
Any number of men. But Winston Duke's character is not necessarily a bad protector. Like, he's resourceful. You know, he thinks his way through dispatching Abraham,
and he does,
and he has to then get closer to his own tether in order to take on his tethered homie in small quarters. You know,
to your point about how Adelaide becomes more fully Red through killing Red, like, maybe that's exactly what's going on with Winston, because you're right, he shoots a little flare, it misses. And then you just hear them let out that primal scream, and they go through it. You know,
they go at it. That's it. You guys shed that sometimes. You know, it's funny though, because a little girl, she just saw some people she ain't fuck with, and was like, "I'm with the shits now." Like,
it didn't take much.
Shits.
But and to your point of the little brother, she's closer to that tether,
correct,
than mom and dad are.
Yeah, it don't take much to get you back there when you're young. Mm-mm. But the little girl's pretty far gone, though. She was on the iPhone. You know, she was.
Oh, yes.
You know, she's trying to drive. Like, she's already close to the idealistic and, you know, kind of, I guess, capitalist ideals of what it is to be American. You know, but nah, dog. But
I gotta say this, though. I think we gotta start talking about, like, aspects of supernatural strength, though. Because Winston Duke is not a small man. He's about, what, 6'3", 6'4"?
Yeah, he's a big dude.
I would say, given his depiction in the film, he's got to be pushing about 280,
yeah,
290.
Big dude, man.
Right. So Abraham grabs him by the ankle and drags him through the house with the greatest of ease.
Yeah, well, like it wasn't nothing. Come on with me.
Also, Sister Girl is a track star, you know? She takes off through the street running. Her counterpart gives her I'm a guy who ran a little bit of track in my day. the lead up that she gives her is insurmountable.
Yeah.
Not only does she catch up to her, she does it so smoothly that she pulls up in front of her and gets there before her. And she's not breathing hard. Like, so, there's something real going on here. And, you know, not to bring it there, but I'm going to bring it there. This is something that they used to say about slaves. Well, it's okay for us to push them as hard as we do and to treat them as poorly as we do, because they don't feel pain like we feel pain. They don't get tired like we get tired. They're stronger than we are. They're faster than we are. They don't love their kids as much as we do. We see all of these tropes being run all throughout here. The tapestry of oppression that Jordan Peele is weaving is quite impressive.
It's pretty good.
Yep. It's kind of great too, you know, that we're bearing witness to a guy who started his career. I mean, he's a comedian and has developed into this really kick-ass filmmaker. And, you know, it's where does he go from here? I mean, he's going to be able to pretty much do whatever the hell he wants after this. I mean, right before we started recording, we were just talking about, I had no interest in a CBS streaming platform before, but now I'm finding interest in the old Twilight Zone show on Netflix. And now I'm like, maybe I'm watching it because I think I'm going to have to get that service and watch what he has up his sleeve for this new Twilight Zone.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I will say this, though.
Go ahead, Damien. No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I was just thinking, you know, his time on Key and Peele, if anything, probably helped him master his craft. You know, you're shooting
these sketches.
You're shooting these ideas on shoestring budgets and really tight turnarounds. And it makes you find the most effective way to get your point across as quickly as possible. You know, and you can hide stuff within scenes because, you know, you're doing sleight of hand. Look over here, but don't look over here. You know, that kind of shit. And you do three seasons of that shit. You get really good at it. And who knew he was such a horror buff? Like, the dude understands horror super, super well. He understands the tropes. He understands lighting. He understands suspense. He understands how to get you and, like, slowly ratchet you up and not let you out.
Right.
I talked about this a little bit with y'all before. You know, when you look at those Halloween episodes of Key and Peele, one in particular where there's this Asian exchange student in the fraternity house. That is legit terrifying if you take some time to look at it and not, like, laugh. And I'll say another thing. I think a comedian is, like, uniquely suited to this kind of work because, you know, what comedy does is they look at the life that we all see and they find the absurdity, the craziness in it.
They hold a mirror up to it.
Yeah, they hold a mirror up to it so that you could see it and laugh and see what they see. But I imagine that looking at life with that skewed viewpoint also shows you a lot of shit that ain't so funny, that is terrifying if you ain't really looking at it the right way, which we've seen in a lot of comedians, you know, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, George Carlin. They've had a way of, like, showing us things that are terrifying, and then they put a little sugar on top of it, make you laugh, and you go to sleep at night. Richard Pryor. Yeah. But I wonder if their lives are not terrifying. You know, there's an old quote, I think it goes, to the sensitive man, life is a tragedy. To the thinking man, life is a comedy. Yeah. You know, like once you start perceiving certain shit, you've got to put some kind of slant on it to survive it.
I mean, Get Out was probably, you know, his worst nightmare when meeting Chelsea Peretti's family.
I imagine that. I mean, yes. You know what? I almost went Problematic Bay, but I stopped. Very proud of myself.
Look at you.
Growth. There you go. There you go.
Scott, any other imagery you want to jump in on?
You know, there's small things I noticed too, like at the beginning of the movie where the main theme is going off, and they zoom out from the eye of the rabbit, and this is before you know. You know, what's kind of going on. If you notice, you know, most of the rabbits are all white in there. Well, but not, I'm talking some of the imagery on the color of the rabbits there.
Yeah.
They zone out. And like, it's like a whole wall of white rabbits. And then you kind of get the interspersed. Some brown ones. You notice some black ones. And, you know, it's just like that imagery is, you know, and I was looking more into that. You know, when I first read the tunnels, part at the beginning of the movie, you know, I'm coming from Peele's first movie, Get Out. So I'm thinking of, you know, is he going where, you know, the Underground Railroad, or, you know, where's he coming with some of this, with this? And maybe I was reading too much into it, thinking that it was going to be another racially motivated film. But I noticed that stuff a little more than I would because of his previous film. And I appreciated that. I think it was something that is worth going back and looking to see what more jumped out to me from there.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. No, I think we can, you know, I think we're going to have a lot of fun over the next few years dissecting Mr. Peele's work. Like, he's obviously got, like, he obviously has a vision and a perspective that is very unique. And, you know, I can't tell you how many horror movies I've seen, but I can tell you that his are the, you know, the very few that catch me off guard in real ways.
We're the beneficiaries of a landscape that's able to be painted in a time that may only be able to get done right now. I feel like we're stealing. You know what I mean? Like, we've been given access to something we probably shouldn't be able to see, and everyone's the better for it.
Yeah,
you know, I love what we've been able to see. Like, this dude has given us two incredibly thought provoking and incredible films in a really short amount of time.
Yeah, the turnaround on this was amazing, considering, you know, what are we at? We're less than 2 years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, less than 2 years.
Get Out the Room. Get Out the Room. Get Out was 2017. Was that 17, yeah. Scott?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I know I talk about it. That shit came out last week, but...
it was 17, yep.
Yeah, so 2 years. And yeah, some real shit happening.
If I can just get Jordan and Boots Riley in a room together, you know what I'm saying?
Wow.
that's all I want. You know what I mean? That's all I want. Let's just let them talk for a little bit. You know, give them some building blocks, some potter's clay. Let them go to work.
I mean, from here, so I'm looking at the stats here for Get Out. Get Out was made for $4.5 million, and it made $255 million.
Jesus.
And he made Us for $20 million, and it's already over $80 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that means his next movie, he's going to get a big budget this next go around.
But he won't.
I think he's smarter than that.
Yeah.
That's where I was going with it. I mean, What do we want to see him do? I'd like to see him keep doing stuff like this. And
here's my thing. I mean, he got a much bigger budget this go around, you know, but I got to believe that the lion's share of that is on actor's feet.
Correct.
I mean, none of what he did couldn't have been done for a tenth of the budget that he has. That's got to be going to actors. So my thought is, and he's obviously, dude, he got Elizabeth Moss. Like, what? I didn't even know she was going to be in it. When I saw her, I was like, is that?
Yeah.
What the fuck? Like, I was blown away.
Well, but I mean, by that token, he got Lupita Nyong'o.
Correct.
I mean, she won an Oscar, and she was just in Black Panther.
Well, look, I expected Lupita because, like, this is one of the, you know, most celebrated Black, you know, new filmmakers we got.
She's been one of the
most celebrated Black films. That I understood. I did not see Elizabeth Moss coming. But that being said, I say he just keeps doing what he's doing. Make, you know, these relatively small scale films. Get the best actors you can get with them, and just give us good stories. Like, if that's the way they choose to spend the money, like, hey, we're going to make a small story, but we're going to spend the money on actors, I'm 100% good with that.
Look, I want to see him do whatever he feels like.
There you go.
Inspiring to him next, because, you know, this is the dude that got Spike the Black Klansman. Like, we can thank this dude for helping Spike get his first Oscar. You know what I mean? That's real stuff, man. And if dude, yeah. if he's this guy, you know, he's this guy. He's playing with Marvel house money at this point.
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, and at this point, you got to think like, I don't know too many black auteurs who have this kind of pull. Like again, you pull Elizabeth Moss, you get this kind of big budget. How long do you do this? This is your sophomore quote unquote slump film, and you knock it off the park. Not only do you knock it off the park, you knock the motherfucking skin off the ball. Like, he really could do pretty much whatever the fuck he wanted to after this point.
Yeah, like, and, you know, the thing is, if he hasn't already made his passion project, now's the time, brother.
Oh
yeah. Absolutely.
But I can't imagine that Get Out wasn't. Look, if Get Out wasn't his passion project, my heart might not be able to take what his passion project was. Right. That shit scared the bejesus out of me, like viscerally and like mentally and emotionally. So, like, right. he might have me in the theater having heart attacks and shit. I don't know if I can take.
Like, is he trying to bury his passion project in one of these Twilight Zone episodes?
Yo, that would be dope.
Well, I mean, I hope he doesn't do that. I mean, I'd like to see it on the big screen. I think he doesn't owe us anything. I think it would benefit him to put it up on the big screen. I mean, I to Tone's point, you know, if we haven't seen his passion project yet, man, get that stuff on the big screen.
Yeah. I'm with it. I'm very happy with the idea of it. You know, I love the fact that dude takes these moments of complete and utter fear, and then he'll interject just human spirit in it and fight. And you know, sometimes you win, sometimes you lose.
right.
We watched a little girl's other get shot 100 feet in the air and stuck onto a tree. You know, at one point, everybody's like, that is some white people shit. She's in the tree, keep driving. Why are you going to go
for for real? There was,
oh
there was
man, no, no, no. That part that angered me at first though too. It was that's one of those horror movie things where you're just going like, oh, okay, get back in the car. What are you doing?
Yeah.
But yo, if that is not post-racial America, when we get to see dark skinned black folks exhibit white curiosity, well god damn it, that is Barack Obama.
And live.
Oh, yes, and live. I mean, well, they weren't going to kill her anyway.
Yeah.
That's funny, though. That's awesome.
But since we talk, look, since Jordan Peele has got the, I know we run out of time, but briefly, Jordan Peele is taking over the Twilight Zone, favorite Twilight Zone episode. Come on, hit me quick.
It's probably the one where the Earth falling into the sun. And the Earth's just getting hotter and hotter. Like everything's melting and shit's falling apart. I really like that one.
I mean, the one I always think of is the
pig people.
The pig people, but yeah, the guy that loses his glasses.
That's a good one.
With all the books.
Mm-hmm.
It's another kind of famous one. In fact, they released a trailer today.
There was time now.
Yeah. The trailer today revealed that one of the first two episodes, they're both dropping on April 1.
That's a great, great release date.
One of the first two episodes is a remake of the one where the dude sees the creature on the wing of the airplane.
Oh, man.
Oh, the Shatner. I love it.
Yeah. So, yes. And, Adam Scott is playing the lead role.
He's playing the little cow?
Yeah.
No, dude, that's Shatner. I'm telling you, that's Shatner.
No, it's John Lithgow. Go look at the movie.
I might have to look that up. Mine is The Self-Improvement of Salvador Ross. Great story about this dirtbag-ass guy who wants to date this great girl, and he can't do it. He figures out a way to buy things he wants from other people. It's amazing. He ends up selling his youth to an old ass rich man for all his money. Then he buys his youth back year by year from countless kids on the cheap. He ends up being young and rich. And it's just great. He just keeps buying personality traits from people. And it of course, it ends up kicking him in his ass at the end. It's one of the great ones. My favorite one I've ever seen. So if you guys haven't seen it, check out The Self-Improvement of Salvador Ross.
It's dope. That's awesome.
Yeah. Now, see, I haven't seen that episode yet. And since I've kind of been rewatching the episodes, that's coming up. So that's good. I just looked it up while you were saying it. And I was just like, oh, yeah, this is coming up in first season. This is good.
Oh, yeah. It's a great one. Great one.
Yeah.
Hey, I tell you that they hold up well, too. And a lot of that I'm going to attribute to that Black Mirror kind of takes the Twilight Zone idea and applies it to modern times.
Yeah.
So it helps. When you, and that doesn't, I mean, not that Twilight Zone needs the help, but it, when you go back and watch it, it certainly is, it still holds up very well. I mean, they're like mini sci-fi horror movies in a way.
Yep. They absolutely are. They're fantastic though. Cause they're not long, but nope. They do so well. Like, you know, everyone remembers the big people. Just the visual, you know, kind of twist at the end is classic, iconic.
Right.
And I'm sure at some point that may get remade, but man, listen, there are moments in that shit that are just so hard. But I love it all, man. I fuck with it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Any other things before we get off of Us?
Will you guys go see this again in the theater?
I would like to.
I would like to. I can't promise I'm going to be able to pull it off, but I definitely want to.
I mean, we got a lot coming up in the next couple of days, man. You know, Scott, pull up what's coming up soon. Yeah, we know.
I know that. Well, I mean, the big movie this week is another comic book movie. I'm not as interested in this one, though. Shazam.
Mm-hmm. Definitely looking forward.
It's actually getting good reviews too.
I'm looking even more forward to the post scene cameo of The Rock
as Black Adam.
Yep.
That's what I feel like we would have already heard that's something that would have happened already.
He is an executive producer of the film. His Black Adam was in the works before Shazam. It's coming. This is Sunday dinner, folks. Come on, it's coming.
Is it? La Llorona. She's April 19th.
Oh, the Conjuring spinoff.
Yep. So that's actually soon. I think Dr. Sleep comes out this year too.
Oh, yeah, they pushed it up.
That worries me.
What do we think of the Hellboy remake?
Hated it.
What's Dave? What's dude's name?
David Harbour. Yeah.
He seems really engaged and like really like up. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just used to the old.
There are some films where the actor embodies a titular character. Ron Perlman makes Hellboy. I don't want to see Hellboy without Ron Perlman.
Well, my first reaction was I like Neil Marshall's directing. I like Neil Marshall. David Harbour is, you know, Hopper in Stranger Things. I like him.
Yep.
So I'm on board with it. And then the first trailer I had mixed feelings on it. They're using a lot of CGI in it.
Yep.
Is Hopper playing the main character? Hold on. Is Hopper playing Hellboy?
Yeah, Hopper's Hellboy.
He lost like 40, 50 pounds.
Well,
That might work.
The thing that worries me though is, so did you guys like the first two Hellboy movies?
I did.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, one of the things that makes Hellboy 1 and 2 so great is they use a lot of practical effects. It reminds me of the early Star Wars films where they're using a lot of puppetry. They're using a lot of, and this new movie now has, dare I say, one of the first movies that came to mind when I was watching it was, and this is not a good comparison, Van Helsing. And I'm like,
that's a terrible comparison.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like, why is there so much CGI in this shit?
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. Van Helsing had a decent plot. It's just the CGI was terrible.
Yeah. Well, okay. The CGI in this Hellboy is better than that. My point is it was almost too much. It was like, and plus that there, does Hellboy need to be rated R?
No.
No.
I mean, that's the other question that really is like,
not at all.
And then I watched an interview with Ron Perlman about, I mean, he's still hurt that he and Del Toro did not get to tell their third story.
He should be.
Yeah. I mean,
they earned the right to tell their story.
Yep.
Well, if they didn't, who did? You know what I mean? I mean, right. Del Toro is certified. Ron Perlman's been doing creature work since Beauty and the Beast back in the 80s. Holla at your boy. I'm a certified nerd back in the old days. So, like, Ron Perlman is, like, about that work. And he really was Hellboy. Now, that being said, I think Hopper has got a little Ron Perlman in him. And so I think he might be able to do a good job at it.
It's a good cast.
It's great casting. But honestly, you really don't want to see anybody play Hellboy other than Ron Perlman. Now, I'm kind of in the same place when it comes to Captain America. Like, just retire him, bring in Patriot, Isaiah Bradley, whoever else. I don't want to see nobody other than Chris Evans play Captain America. Like, I'm done. Some people are just that good at the role.
I can't argue with that. Because Chris Evans, we talked about it. Chris Evans has embodied the role, man. He is Captain
Absolutely. America. Absolutely.
It looks like we got Brightburn. He's coming up soon.
I think that's a later half of the year, right?
Brightburn is May 24.
Okay.
Then you got Ma. Ma is May 31.
Yep, that shit is.
Theaters. Child's Play is June 21.
No haps. Pet Sematary should be coming up soon.
Hold on a minute.
June 28 is
Annabelle. The third Annabelle movie is June 28. It's funny that Child's Play and Annabelle are a week apart.
Both about
dolls.
Yep, dolls and
puppies. Yeah. Let's see. Maybe I missed the Pet Sematary here. Oh, here we go. Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yeah.
Do you guys see the trailer for that? I'm kind of excited to see that one. I read those books growing up, so I'm thinking that might be pretty cool. I love those books.
Okay. All right.
I'm wholly unfamiliar, frankly.
And that's August.
Wholly unfamiliar.
Yeah, August. It is after that. Maybe I missed. I must have missed Pet Sematary.
It doesn't come up in any of the searches.
But yeah, I couldn't care less about Pet.
Oh no shit, dude! They're remaking Addams Family.
Yeah, I don't want to see that.
Oscar Isaac, Charlize Theron, Chloe Grace Moretz, and Finn Wolfhard.
Nope, don't want to see it.
No.
Nope. So tell me, why are you so anti Pet Sematary?
Well, I read the, you know me. I'm all about Stephen King.
I know you read the book.
Yeah, I read the book. The book isn't really that good, frankly. The movie adaptation of it, which was actually very, very faithful to King's original telling, isn't that good. From what I can tell, they're taking a departure from the original, from the original material, which a la The Shining is always a bad idea whenever you do King. You just can't pull it off, right? Nothing about this tells me that it's going to be good.
Kubrick was the one who took Kubrick, he went in the other direction. If Kubrick can't tell a fucking Stephen King story, who the fuck can?
Well, that's the point. Exactly. You make my point for me. If that motherfucker can't do it, who can? Right. So... they don't lend. I love Stephen King with all my heart. His stories do not lend well to the screen.
April 5th.
Yeah, it's out soon.
Yep.
Yeah, no. The only thing that his stories work well is miniseries. That's why we have Stand By Me, which is a certified classic. Stand, certified classic. It, certified classic. His stories lend well to miniseries. They don't lend well to 2-hour movies. They just don't. They never work. So I don't need it.
It takes, I mean, they're not easily digestible in 2 hours.
No, not at all. That's not how he writes. That's not how he writes.
That's true. But I'm actually really, from what I've seen of Pet Sematary, it looks creepy. It looks like it could be good.
The earliest reviews are very good too.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, Lithgow out here. Here for it. Fuck with Lithgow.
Yeah, I'm all for Lithgow. Lithgow is dope. I'm all Lithgow for Lithgow.
He's got great range.
He really does. He was the best Dexter villain as a Trinity killer.
Absolutely. Lithgow, like, you know, until you see him, you know, I'm so used to him being goofy, a goofy dad type, yeah, that when you see him take it on that other level, like, you're like, oh, holy shit, I totally forgot.
I'll give you two. He was in two, he played the villain in two good action flicks. Cliffhanger, he was a great villain. And he was a good villain in the Denzel Washington movie, Ricochet.
I knew you.
Ricochet.
Yes, he was.
I love Ricochet, man.
Outstanding in that. He was outstanding in that.
Yes, he was.
Yeah, no, Lithgow is.
Going to bring that up.
Lithgow is the truth. There ain't a lie in him. He's the real deal.
Yeah, he's a real deal. I fuck with him.
So, hey, we got a lot of good movies coming up, horror-wise.
Yeah, like, I'm probably going to end up seeing Pet Sematary. I'm kind of excited about that one. I know Tone isn't.
I'm halfway on it. I mean, you know, we'll see.
I mean, I'll see it for the people. You know what I'm saying? I ain't gonna see it for y'all, but I'll see it for the people. I'm just gonna shit up the whole way.
Talk shit the whole time. It's okay. It's all right. We out here. We'll see it. What else? There's the Stranger Things trailer dropped.
It looks good.
Does look good. Kids are old as fuck.
One of them is like that motherfucker looked like he about to play basketball. Have they drafted him yet?
Caleb McLaughlin.
All the shit.
The kid who plays the black kid, he's like 6'2" now. He's enormous. Kid is huge, man.
Hey, we can mention a nice callback to the show I used to love, man. Walking Dead finally did it with the Whisperers too.
Yeah, they finally beheaded Alpha, and I believe it was our guy who did it too. Correct?
No. It was the Alpha's. It was Alpha's beheading. She marked the territory line.
Oh
yeah.
Oh, was that?
Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea what y'all are talking about. I checked out of that shit like 4 years
ago. All right, so yeah, hey, so spoilers for those that don't know this.
Yeah,
the Whisperers are characters that peel the skin off of zombies, wear them as their own, and that's their group.
That's their
skin. And the leader, correct. And they don't they give away all their names, and they just call each other like simple names. And the leader of the group is a woman named Alpha, and
okay.
She is this brutal one. I mean, she's fucking brutal. And these characters are much more interesting than the Saviors.
Like, on a scale of 1 to Carol, how badass is she? She can't be as bad as Michonne. No, but on a scale of 1 to Carol, how bad is she?
She's the other side of the coin of Carol, because she
was. So she's Carol without the warming influence of the group.
Correct.
Yeah.
She's like Carol that. If she'll also she'll behead you and then feed someone your head. Type so shit.
She's Carol without the anchor. Carol yeah. has an emotional anchor still.
Imagine, Alpha does not.
Yeah, she does not.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
No. Alpha's a great character. She's a cool character.
But she was also abused. She's very similar to Carol. Yeah. So in here, that is
so
very much the other side of the coin for that.
The big twist in the Whisper story is the group is kind of dealing with this new group. They have a dispute over some of the borders between the two groups.
Alpha, as always, that's always
right. Well, right, but they Alpha makes it a point to really tell them what that she means business, and so they have a scene where the different communities hold a fair, like the very first time they all come together to hold like kind of a county fair type thing. And during the fair, certain characters you notice are missing. And, you know, everybody's like, hey, where'd the such and such go? Where'd such and such go? Well, the main characters walk out and see, they go to the, out in this open field, and they see on spikes, Alpha has taken and abducted a dozen characters, beheaded them, and put their heads on spikes to mark the border. And in the comic book, she beheads characters like Ezekiel from the Kingdom.
Oh, yeah. I like him. I remember him.
And she beheads Rosita, who was pregnant at the time in the comic book.
She ain't playing around.
In the show, they went a different route. They didn't kill either one of them. But they did kill Tara, the girl with who was introduced with the governor.
Yep.
And they killed apparently this character that I didn't know, but he had become a more major character very, very recently. And so much so they were kind of setting him up, I guess, to be the new Carl. Again, I'm basing this off of reading it, and I watched the scene, because I don't watch the show anymore either, but I like the scene from the comic book. And I mean, so she did that. She beheaded that kid as well. And she beheaded a lot of other minor characters, but the scene played out very similarly to the comic book. So
what I'm hearing is, in classic Walking Dead style, they built a character up just to kill him off. Is that what I'm seeing?
Yes. Well, yes.
Okay.
But keep this in mind, though. From all,
they're still using the same tricks. Got it.
Yeah, but for all accounts, this season has been quite good. I have not watched it. But
no, I haven't either. I've just been following up, like, on the follow-ups. And, like, I was excited to hear that scene had been adapted to screen. And because it's in the comics, it's one of those things. I mean, you're reading it, you go, I mean, especially because the big one there is, you know, Rosita and Ezekiel are major characters in the comics. Yeah, and they die. I mean, you flip the page and you're like, that's Ezekiel's head on a spike. And
yeah,
wow,
I had heard that the writing has started to get better. But at this point, I checked out years ago. It was never good enough. I watched it for the spectacle. We stayed into it for the peoples. But, you know, the pattern of repeatedly killing off anybody that was darker than a paper bag that had any bit of backbone in them. And then them finally neutering Michonne, I was like, I'm out. I can't do this shit no more.
I understand. I
told them. I warned them. Hey. We know they listening. I warned them. I was like, yo, y'all keep doing this shit, I'm going to stop watching. So, like, they had their warning. I'm good. I ain't coming back.
Hey, the thing that did me was, you know, the Savior story just went on and on and on and on and on and on and on.
Seasons almost?
Jeez. I'm just,
I checked.
It did it in the comic books.
I checked out after.
And I did tell you guys when I was still on board, I said the Savior story is not what everybody thinks it's going to be. It's not what everybody thinks it's going to be. And it does not adapt well to the screen. It did not adapt well.
I think after I think I made it into the Jeffrey Dean Morgan arc. And then I think, because that was the season finale when he killed Glenn. That one really got my heart. I was really done after that.
That season finale is one of the most disappointing hours of fucking television I've ever seen.
Yeah, when they killed Glenn, and then I thought,
who he kills until the season premiere the next year.
Correct.
Right, but we all had a feeling it might have been Glenn. We weren't sure. When I found out it was Glenn,
that's what's in the comic.
Yeah, when I found out it was Glenn, my heart wasn't in it. I watched another episode or two, and I was like, I just can't do this.
Well, Rick got real bitch made real fast. It just
wasn't for me anymore. I was like, all right, you can kill everybody.
Well, again, they did that. He was that way in the comic too, but it didn't play on screen very well. And
here's the thing. After the comics came out, I want to say what, maybe 5-10 years before the show.
Yeah, that's about right.
Right. And so, like, this pattern of, like, neutering strong ethnic characters, like, repeatedly, like, as a pattern, that shit, like, it just doesn't play as well these days. And it just got on my nerves. And then they got Glenn, and I was like, and he had Glenn had, like, a really strong and broad character arc. And then I'm like, okay, you just can't keep killing off all these people.
Yeah.
And I just was done. I just couldn't
I understand. It's just, that, the, I saw it coming because, you know, I knew where the comic led to, and they played up this brand new character that was the hot character, Negan. And they did the same thing with the governor and on the show. And they jumped ahead of themselves. They made him entirely too important to the story. And they focused entirely too much of the plot on this new character. And when you do that and you start exploring, I mean, part of what makes characters so cool when you first see them and you see glimpses of them is you're piecing together their story a little bit in your own mind. You know, like, where did this guy come from? Why is he this way? You know, it's the I call it like the Boba Fett syndrome. You know, what right. makes Boba Fett cool is we don't know anything about him. When you start learning shit about him, it makes him less interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan is a good actor. And, you know, he was good at chewing that scenery and whatnot. But ultimately, after having gone through that with the governor, I just wasn't really willing to commit more. And then, you know, when I found out, like, the fucking Saviors arc lasted, like, what, 2-3 seasons?
Yep.
Yeah. I can't do that.
It was a long time, dude.
I can't do that.
But I mean, one of the things that makes the Whisperers more interesting is they're just more interesting in general. They're a little more brutal, which makes them more compelling as villains, and the story moves a lot quicker.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm with that, but yeah, no, they lost me. Sorry.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
Becky, we haven't tuned back in. You know what I mean? Like, I have it on in the background. I'm just waiting to see motherfuckers get killed. So I'm trying to fast forward to the end of the shit. Like, all right, it's good.
The scene is a dope scene. That's the only one I watch. But it's one of those, it's like, okay, hey, they did well by me for adapting the comic a little bit. I mean, you know, they couldn't go there and kill Ezekiel and Rosita because they lost Andrew Lincoln. They lost Lauren Cohen. They lost, you know what I mean? Like, they can't actually keep killing majors. So Tara is not necessarily a major, but I guess she is.
I mean, they were kind of setting her up to be, but, you know, I don't think.
Well, I mean, who they got left at this point? You know what I mean?
Like, Daryl is the star.
Yep.
Yeah, they're not going to ever let go of Daryl. They'd have a revolt.
Especially not now.
Well, and Danai has said next season is her last one.
Yeah.
I'm honestly shocked she stuck around after this. I'm shocked she stuck around after
half of the episode. She's going to. I mean, that Marvel money coming. She got her own Reebok contract.
Yeah, dude. Once you get in that Black Panther, like, I don't know why you put up with Kirkman bullshit anymore. I've been like, seriously, I'm like, okay.
They're the people that put you on the map. You're not gonna throw your back on them.
But... the fuck, I won't. You got me. You get me in the house that Mickey built. Peace, and I'm out.
That's possibly why they haven't called you. What We Do in the Dark is about to come on FX, and it's one more too.
Wait, What We Do in the Dark is this? The Jermaine. Yeah. I'm calling him Jermaine. That ain't his name, but
his name's Jermaine Clement.
But there you go.
It's actually Taika Waititi, the director of Thor Ragnarok. It's his stuff. They've turned it into a series now, so that'll be out on FX. And Killing Eve comes back in a couple of weeks too.
I think we got the final season of the final season of Legion coming up, in which they actually do decide to introduce Mr. Professor X. So that's going to be interesting. That show is weird as fuck and good and well written.
Yeah, you know what? That's one of the X-Men things. I watched the first couple episodes, and
it's hard.
I didn't really get into it. I don't know. It's too. I think it's too surreal for me.
It's very surreal.
I saw Aubrey Plaza trapped inside the wall, and she was for real, legit trapped inside the wall and dead. This is too much.
It's very surreal, and it is very tough to watch at times. But just as a fan. And as a fan of the comic books, you know, having, you know, my personal experience with Legion and X-Men and like everything that happened, I was just on board. And it's one of those that you have to watch for a while. Like,
they're bringing Professor X into the show.
Yes.
Really?
And Professor X into the show.
Huh. Okay.
I don't know how they're going to do it.
Yeah, this has been mind-melding. This has been crazy what they've been able to do with Legion. Because isn't Shadow King the main villain?
Yes, yes.
And, you know, he's all over the place. So, you know, they've done a lot. I just don't know if it's something that I can... I don't really have the interest in it.
Here's the thing. It's not casual viewing.
Right.
You know, it not even close. Like, you got to watch this shit.
Oh, shit. Wait, do you guys know who they cast as Professor X? Okay. Oh, man, see, I don't know if I like this or not. The dude that played Viserys Targaryen.
Yeah. Yeah, Viserys. Yeah, that's not a great actor.
Wait, what? Hold on, let me...
Yeah, that's not a great
actor. Wait a minute, is that the big brother of Mother of Dragons?
Yes.
Yeah.
That makes no sense to me. Oh, God damn it. It's this Game of Thrones shit. Like, Game of Thrones is dope, but they gotta stop putting these actors in the other shit. Their talents don't translate well.
They really frankly. Don't. Like, they've been cast for one thing in particular.
What, you mean Finn Jones?
Right.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Prime example. Yeah. Prime example. Yeah. The man who single-handedly murdered the Netflix fucking series.
The Netflix Marvel show?
Damn,
I mean, I lay that shit at his feet. He is the reason we don't get no more. We get no more of the that good Luke Cage. It's Finn Jones' fault.
Damn it. But you're right. It you can point to that being the beginning of the end.
I know I am.
Full miss, and it never came back after that.
And the crazy thing is, like, they didn't correct it. Like, look, if you can get Keanu Reeves' big goofy ass to look like a credible action star, and a lot of that was on Keanu, like, he put in the work, but I'm just saying, if it can be done, how is it that they did not put this dude in a camp? Like, you cannot be the immortal Iron Fist and look like you've never been in a fight in your life. Like, they just did themselves a ridiculous disservice with the fight choreography on that shit.
You're not wrong. I can't even argue with you about this shit. Like, you're not wrong.
Nah, man, it's like water is wet, gravity works, and that motherfucker sucks. Like, it is what it is.
Oh, man, that's great.
Yeah, you know, it's bad because at this point now you're left with, you know, all these other people who were like, yo, I could have had all this, but because y'all cast this motherfucker, the entire shit fell down.
Well, I like how you were saying that without trying to burst out laughing.
Dude. Well, I mean, and the crazy thing is we all, like, I remember when they casted him and everybody, it wasn't just us, and we tend to be right more than most folks. It was not just us. Everybody was like, huh? Who? Ben Jones? That dude? Right. That's Iron Fist? Like, it was just bad all the way around.
Well, you're trying to appeal to genre fans by casting the guy who played Loras Tyrell on Game of Thrones. That's mistake number one.
Correct.
Number two is you're trying to push a guy who has no former martial arts training to be a martial arts character.
And the taping schedule was rushed, so he didn't get the time necessary.
No time to prepare. None.
He said everybody else had like a year to get
ready. You know who would have been a dope Iron Fist? Scott Adkins.
Anyone else?
Scott Adkins would have been a dope Iron Fist, but he's too physically imposing. Scott Adkins is a much bigger dude.
Well, and I mean, let's be real. I mean, I love Scott Adkins, but he's not a great actor either. So
neither is Ben Jones. Now what?
Well, touche.
If you won't cast an unbelievable lead, at least cast one that can throw a punch.
Yeah, that's true.
But Danny Rand's not supposed to be physically imposing. Like, Iron Fist is just the baddest
and,
man.
And yes, and that's the problem. Scott Adkins is just too physically imposing. But that being said, there was a petition for a while. A lot of the fans were like, why don't you cast an Asian American actor?
Right.
I think that would have been a wonderful way to go. Cast an Asian American whitewashed actor, send him off to the real Asia, let him get his ass fucked up, and then we have that same fish out of water story. It works just the same, but now we've got a new angle on it. that would have been amazing, but they chose not to do that.
And instead, now they're
listening to them fanboys and them neckbeards.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Fucking neckbeards. And now they're doing Bruce Lee just to appease people, which I think is a mistake. The Shang-Chi book.
I'm not big on a lot of these new movies they're hinting at. Instead of where's Black Panther 2 and Doctor Strange 2 and so I mean come
Black
on.
Panther 2 is like confirmed for 2023 or something like that.
Why do the Eternals and Shang-Chi? Like why?
So Shang-Chi was a direct response to the fact that there are no Asian anything other than Wong, who basically, you know, is bitched up and has to answer.
Now, this spits directly in the face of where you were going in our last episode here, where you were saying, well, we have to go bigger and grander from Captain Marvel. And I'm like, well, going into an Asian hero, I mean, not Asian, but like martial arts hero on Earth, it's not the way to do that.
But all of this is just shitty course correction. Like, not only did they fuck up Iron Fist, they cast Tilda Swinton as the Ancient One. It's like they were purposefully avoiding Asian American characters. Like, they made themselves look stupid.
I mean, well, they caught a lot of shit for that. And, you know, Kevin Feige and all of them kind of explained that, like, the Ancient One doesn't have a race. It's anybody. And I'm like, okay.
Shut the fuck up. That's just bullshit. Shut the fuck up.
I thought that was a bad idea, too.
Here's the thing. This came after the brouhaha over Finn Jones.
Right.
So it's like they were just tone deaf. I'm sorry. That was just tone deaf. There are plenty of Asian American actors out there. Shit, they could have got fucking. Who could have? Man, put man. You know what? Put Constance Wu in a fucking camp for a couple of months. Tell me she wouldn't have made a badass Asian one.
She can do it.
Come on, man.
But I mean, there's a ton. You know,
much good talent. Put fucking Michelle. Yeah, put fucking Michelle Yeoh in there as the Ancient One. Are you kidding me?
Kill. There are a ton of really talented Asian actors and actresses who are getting opportunities taken. And keep it the thing. I love me some Tilda Swinton. I'm all for Tilda Swinton. But let's not take away the fact that there are Asian and Asian American actors and actresses who would love the opportunity to get some of these Mickey Mouse checks.
Absolutely. And who could have done they could have done these vehicles more justice. Again, the idea of having an Asian American cat play Iron Fist for the first time and you still get the fish out of water because Asia is not America. And if you are raised out here, going to Asia is not going to be like, you're not going to be like, oh yeah, this is home. Like that would have worked on a lot of different levels. It would have been a hit, but you know, fuck around, listen to these goddamn neckbeards, man. They just ruining everything. First they ruined Iron Fist, then they came for America and gave us Trump. Man, they just fucking shit up, yo.
Oh, man, that's great.
That's fantastic, by the way.
It is. It absolutely is.
So, man, anything else you'd like to?
No, I think I'm veering dangerously close to problematic if I've not already redlined, so I'm gonna shut the fuck up.
I mean, you getting close. I'm just trying to see how far we can let you ride. Like,
No. I'm gonna tug on the leash and reel it back, reel it in.
Yeah, you's going, bro. That's pretty good though. But yeah, so. This has been Get Out the Room, us, and everything else that we like to talk about, because that's what the fuck we like to talk about. Next episode should be Pet Sematary or something of the like, so early April. Don't look for us before then. You're getting two episodes within a week.
Yeah, you got to be happy, folks. Don't come at us with that Oliver Twist shit, yo. We're doing the best we can. We got jobs and families and shit like that. We're doing what we can.
That's great. So y'all can look for us in like two and a half weeks. We'll be back out here.
There you go.
Sky, anything you want to say before we get out?
No. I'd say you'd find me online, but you guys know the drill.
Yeah, you are a goddamn liar.
We know that's not true. And Tom, anything else you'd like to say before we get on out of here?
Nah, y'all. Just, you know, check your rearview mirror. See somebody that looks like you in a, you know, with a little red jumpsuit. Like, don't ask no questions. Don't turn back and look. Don't have a conversation with them. Just run. Just run.
Well, I mean, they still coming, so you're going to have to knuckle up at some point.
At some point, but don't let go of the bat, yo. That's all I'm saying. Like, don't let go of the bat.
Yeah, don't put the bat in between the door and the
frame. No, don't do that. Don't do that, man. Don't do that. It's a bad idea.
Yeah, don't put the bat between the door and the frame, dumbass.
No, a bat beats a door. Rock, paper, scissors, bat beats door. Every time. Every time.
Was a mistake. So, for everybody, Scott, Tone, we are Get Out the Room. You can find us anywhere good podcasts are found. And we'll catch y'all next time, man.
Peace.
Peace.
What up, folks? Get Out the Room is back. Get Out the Room, episode 100.